to calculate. Noon of what day?
The 14th of the new year, said Gandalf, or, if you like, the 8th day of April in the Shire Reckoning. But in Gondor the new year will always now begin upon the 25th of March, when Sauron fell. And when you were brought out of the fire to the king, he has tended you, and now he awaits you. You shall eat and drink with him. When you are ready, I will lead you to him.
The king? Said Sam. What king? And who is he?
The king of Gondor and lord of the western lands, said Gandalf. And he has taken back all his ancient realm. He will ride soon to his crowning, but he waits for you.
What shall we wear? Said Sam.
For all he could see was the old and tattered clothes that they had journeyed in, lying folded on the ground beside their beds.
The clothes that you wore on your way to Mordor, said Gandalf. Even the orc rags that you bore in the Blackland, Frodo, shall be preserved. No silks and linens, nor any armour or heraldry could be more honourable. But later I will find some other clothes, perhaps.
Then he held out his hands to them, and they saw that one shone with light. What have you got there? Frodo cried. Can it be?
Yes, I brought your two treasures. They were found on Sam when you were rescued. The Lady Galadriel's gifts. Your glass, Frodo, and your box, Sam. You will be glad to have these safe again.
When they were washed and clad, and had eaten a light meal, the hobbits followed Gandalf. They stepped out of the beech grove in which they had lain, and passed on to a long green lawn, glowing in sunshine, bordered by stately, dark-leaved trees laden with scarlet blossom. Behind them they could hear the sound of falling water, and a stream ran down before them between flowering banks, until it came to a green wood at the lawn's foot, and passed then on under an archway of trees, through which they saw the shimmer of water far away. As they came to the opening in the wood, they were surprised to see knights in bright mail and tall guards in silver and black standing there, who greeted them with honour and bowed before them. And then one blew a long trumpet, and they went on through the aisle of trees beside the singing stream. So they came to a wide green land, and beyond it was a broad river in a silver haze, out of which rose a long wooded isle, and many ships lay by its shores. But on the field where they now stood, a great host was drawn up, in ranks and companies glittering in the sun. And as the hobbits approached, swords were unsheathed, and spears were shaken, and horns and trumpets sang, and men cried with many voices and in many tongues, "Long live the halflings! Praise them with great praise! Cuyo I feri ein anan, Anglan I feri anath! Praise them with great praise, Frodo and Samwise, Dara behail, Conin and Anrun, Eglerio, praise them, Eglerio, Alaitate, Laitate, Andave, Light of Almet, praise them, Corma Colindor, Alaita Tariena, praise them, the ring-bearers, praise them with great praise." And so the red blood blushing in their faces and their eyes shining with wonder, Frodo and Sam went forward and saw that amidst the clamorous host were set three high seats built of green turves. Behind the seat upon the right floated, white on green, a great horse running free. Upon the left was a banner, silver upon blue, a ship swan-proud faring on the sea. But behind the highest throne in the midst of all, a great standard was spread in the breeze, and there a white tree flowered upon a sable field beneath a shining crown and seven glittering stars. On the throne sat a mail-clad man. A great sword was laid across his knees, but he wore no helm. As they drew near, he rose. And then they knew him, changed as he was, so high and glad of face, kingly, lord of men, dark-haired with eyes of grey. Frodo ran to meet him, and Sam followed close behind.
"Well, if that isn't the crown of all," he said. "Strider, or I'm still asleep."
"Yes, Sam, Strider," said Aragorn. "It is a long way, is it not, from Bree, where you did not like the look of me? A long way for us all, but yours has been the darkest road.
and then to Sam's surprise and utter confusion he bowed his knee before them. And taking them by the hand, Frodo upon his right and Sam upon his left, he led them to the throne, and setting them upon it, he turned to the men and captains who stood by and spoke, so that his voice rang over all the host, crying, "Praise them with great praise!" And when the glad shout had swelled up and died away again, to Sam's final and complete satisfaction and pure joy, a minstrel of Gondor stood forth and knelt and begged leave to sing. And behold, he said,
"Lo, lords and knights and men of valor unashamed, kings and princes, and fair people of Gondor, and riders of Rohan, and ye sons of Elrond, and Dúnadan of the North, and elf and dwarf, and great hearts of the Shire, and all free folk of the West, now listen to my lay. For I will sing to you of Frodo of the Nine Fingers and the Ring of Doom."
And when Sam heard that, he laughed aloud for sheer delight, and he stood up and cried,
"O great glory and splendor, and all my wishes have come true!"
And then he wept. And all the host laughed and wept, and in the midst of their merriment and tears, the clear voice of the minstrel rose like silver and gold, and all men were hushed. And he sang to them, now in the elven tongue, now in the speech of the West, until their hearts, wounded with sweet words, overflowed, and their joy was like swords, and they passed in thought out to regions where pain and delight flow together, and tears are the very wine of blessedness. And at the last, as the sun fell from the noon and the shadows of the trees lengthened, he ended.
"Praise them with great praise," he said, and knelt.
And then Aragorn stood up, and all the host arose, and they passed to pavilions made ready, to eat and drink and make merry while the day lasted. Frodo and Sam were led apart and brought to a tent, and there their old raiment was taken off, but folded and set aside with honour, and clean linen was given to them. Then Gandalf came, and in his arms, to the wonder of Frodo, he bore the sword and the elven cloak and the mithril coat that had been taken from him in Mordor. For Sam he brought a coat of gilded mail, and his elven cloak all healed of the soils and hurts that it had suffered. And then he laid before them two swords. "I do not wish for any sword," said Frodo.
"Tonight at least you should wear one," said Gandalf.
Then Frodo took the small sword that had belonged to Sam, and had been laid at his side in Cirith Ungol. "Sting I gave to you, Sam," he said.
"No, master. Mr. Bilbo gave it to you, and it goes with his silver coat. He wouldn't wish anyone else to wear it now."
Frodo gave way, and Gandalf, as if he were their esquire, knelt and girt the sword belts about them, and then rising he set circlets of silver upon their heads. And when they were arrayed, they went to the great feast, and they sat at the king's table with Gandalf and King Éomer of Rohan, and the Prince Imrahil, and all the chief captains, and there also were Gimli and Legolas. But when, after the standing silence, wine was brought, there came in two esquires to serve the kings, or so they seemed to be. One was clad in the silver and sable of the guards of Minas Tirith, and the other in white and green. But Sam wondered what such young boys were doing in an army of mighty men. Then suddenly, as they drew near, and he could see them plainly, he exclaimed,
"Why, look, Mr. Frodo! Look here!
Well, if it isn't Pippin, Mr. Peregrine Took, I should say, and Mr. Merry! How they've grown, bless me! But I can see there's more tales to tell than ours."
"There are indeed," said Pippin, turning towards him, "and we'll begin telling them as soon as this feast is ended. In the meantime, you can try Gandalf. He's not so close as he used to be, though he laughs now more than he talks. For the present, Merry and I are busy. We're knights of the city and of the mark, as I hope you observe."
At last the glad day ended, and when the sun was gone and the round moon rode slowly above the mists of Anduin and flickered through the fluttering leaves, Frodo and Sam sat under the whispering trees amid the fragrance of fair Ithilien, and they talked deep into the night with Merry and Pippin and Gandalf, and after a while Legolas and Gimli joined them. There Frodo and Sam learned much of all that had happened to the company after their fellowship was broken on the evil day at Path Garlan by Rauros Falls, and still there was always more to ask and more to tell. Orcs and talking trees and leagues of grass and galloping riders and glittering caves and white towers and golden halls and battles and tall ships sailing, all these passed before Sam's mind until he felt bewildered. But amidst all these wonders he returned again to his astonishment at the size of Merry and Pippin, and he made them stand back to back with Frodo and himself. He scratched his head.
"Can't understand it at your age," he said. "But there it is. You're 3 inches taller than you ought to be, or I'm a dwarf."
"That you certainly are not," said Gimli. "But what did I say? Mortals cannot go drinking Ent draughts and expect no more to come of them than a pot of beer."
"Ent draughts?" said Sam. "There you go about Ents again, but what they are beats me. Why, it'll take weeks before we get all these things sized up."
"Weeks indeed," said Pippin. "And then Frodo will have to be locked up in a tower in Minas Tirith and write it all down. Otherwise he'll forget half of it, and poor old Bilbo will be dreadfully disappointed."
At length Gandalf rose. "The hands of the king are hands of healing, dear friends," he said. "But he went to the very brink of death ere he recalled you, putting forth all his power, and sent you into the sweet forgetfulness of sleep. And though you have indeed slept long and blessedly, still it is now time to sleep again."
"And not only Sam and Frodo here," said Gimli, "but you too, Pippin. I love you, if only because of the pains you've cost me, which I shall never forget, nor shall I forget finding you on the hill of the last battle. But for Gimli the dwarf you would have been lost then. But at least I know now the look of a hobbit's foot, though it be all that can be seen under a heap of bodies. And when I heaved that great carcass off, I made sure you were dead. I could have torn out my beard. And it's only a day yet since you were first up and abroad again. To bed now you go, and so shall I."
"And I," said Legolas, "shall walk in the woods of this fair land, which is rest enough. In days to come, if my elven lord allows, some of our folk shall remove hither, and when we come it shall be blessed for a while. For a while, a month, a life, 100 years of men. But Anduin is near, and Anduin leads down to the sea. To the sea.
To the sea, to the sea, the white gulls are crying. The wind is blowing, and the white foam is flying. West, west, away, the round sun is falling. Grey ship, grey ship, do you hear them calling? The voices of my people that have gone before me. I will leave the woods that bore me. For our days are ending, and our years failing. I will pass the wide waters, lonely sailing. Long are the waves on the last shore falling. Sweet are the voices in the lost isle calling. In Eressëa, in elven home that no man can discover, where the leaves fall not. Land of my people, forever.
And so singing, Legolas went away down the hill. Then the others also departed, and Frodo and Sam went to their beds and slept. And in the morning they rose again in hope and peace, and they spent many days in Ithilien. For the field of Cormallan, where the host was now encamped, was near to Heneth Annwn, and the stream that flowed from its falls could be heard in the night as it rushed down through its rocky gate and passed through the flowery meads into the tides of Anduin by the isle of Caer Andros. The hobbits wandered here and there, visiting again the places that they had passed before, and Sam hoped always in some shadow of the woods or secret glade to catch, maybe, a glimpse of the great Olifaunt. And when he learned that at the siege of Gondor there had been a great number of these beasts, but that they were all destroyed, he thought it a sad loss. "Well, one can't be everywhere at once, I suppose," he said. "But I missed a lot, seemingly." In the meanwhile, the host made ready for the return to Minas Tirith. The weary rested, and the hurt were healed. For some had laboured and fought much with the remnants of the Easterlings and Southrons until all were subdued. And latest of all, those returned who had passed into Mordor and destroyed the fortresses in the north of the land. But at the last, when the month of May was drawing near, the captains of the West set out again. And they went aboard ship with all their men, and they sailed from Caer Andros down Anduin to Osgiliath. And there they remained for one day. And the day after, they came to the green fields of the Pelennor, and saw again the white towers under tall Myndolwyn, the city of the men of Gondor, last memory of Westerness, that had passed through the darkness and fire to a new day. And there, in the midst of the fields, they set up their pavilions and awaited the morning. For it was the eve of May, and the king would enter his gates with the rising of the sun. Chapter 5. The Steward and the King. Over the city of Gondor, doubt and great dread had hung. Fair weather and clear sun had seemed but a mockery to men whose days held little hope, and who looked each morning for news of doom. Their lord was dead and burned. Dead lay the king of Rohan in their citadel, and the new king that had come to them in the night was gone again to a war with powers too dark and terrible for any might or valour to conquer. And no news came. After the host left Morgul Vale and took the northward road beneath the shadow of the mountains, no messenger had returned, nor any rumour of what was passing in the brooding east. When the captains were but 2 days gone, the Lady Eowyn bade the women who tended her to bring her raiment, and she would not be gainsaid, but rose. And when they had clothed her and set her arm in a sling of linen, she went to the warden of the houses of healing. "Sir," she said, "I am in great unrest, and I cannot lie longer in sloth."
"Lady," he answered, "you are not yet healed, and I was commanded to tend you with a special care. You should not have risen from your bed for 7 days yet, or so I was bidden. I beg you to go back."
"I am healed," she said. "Healed at least in body, save my left arm only, and that is at ease. But I shall sicken anew if there is naught that I can do. Are there no tidings of war? The women can tell me nothing."
"There are no tidings," said the warden, "save that the lords have ridden to Morgul Vale, and men say that the new captain out of the north is their chief. A great lord is that, and a healer, and it is a thing passing strange to me that the healing hand should also wield the sword. It is not thus in Gondor now, though once it was so, if old tales be true. But for years we healers have only sought to patch the rents made by the men of swords. Though we should still have enough to do without them, the world is full enough of hurts and mischances without wars to multiply them.
"It needs but one foe to breed a war, not two, Master Warden," answered Eowyn. "And those who have not swords can still die upon them. Would you have the folk of Gondor gather you herbs only, when the Dark Lord gathers armies? And it is not always good to be healed in body, nor is it always evil to die in battle, even in bitter pain. What I permitted, in this dark hour I would choose the latter." The warden looked at her. Tall she stood there, her eyes bright in her white face, her hand clenched as she turned and gazed out of his window that opened to the east. He sighed and shook his head. After a pause she turned to him again. "Is there no deed to do?" she said. "Who commands in this city?"
"I do not rightly know," he answered. "Such things are not my care. There is a marshal over the riders of Rohan, and the Lord Húrin, I am told, commands the men of Gondor. But the Lord Faramir is by right the steward of the city."
"Where can I find him?"
"In this house, lady. He was sorely hurt, but is now set again on the way to health. But I do not know. Will you not bring me to him?"
"Then you will know."
The Lord Faramir was walking alone in the garden of the Houses of Healing, and the sunlight warmed him, and he felt life run new in his veins, but his heart was heavy, and he looked out over the walls eastward. And coming, the warden spoke his name, and he turned and saw the Lady Eowyn of Rohan, and he was moved with pity, for he saw that she was hurt, and his clear sight perceived her sorrow and unrest.
"My lord," said the warden, "here is the Lady Eowyn of Rohan. She rode with the king and was sorely hurt, and dwells now in my keeping. But she is not content, and she wishes to speak to the steward of the city."
"Do not misunderstand me, lord," said Eowyn. "It is not lack of care that grieves me. No houses could be fairer for those who desire to be healed. But I cannot lie in sloth, idle, caged. I looked for death in battle, but I have not died, and battle still goes on."
At a sign from Faramir, the warden bowed and departed.
"What would you have me do, lady?" said Faramir. "I also am a prisoner of the healers." He looked at her, and being a man whom pity deeply stirred, it seemed to him that her loveliness amid her grief would pierce his heart. And she looked at him and saw the grave tenderness in his eyes, and yet knew, for she was bred among men of war, that here was one whom no rider of the mark would outmatch in battle.
"What do you wish?" he said again. "If it lies in my power, I will do it."
"I would have you command this warden, and bid him let me go," she said. But though her words were still proud, her heart faltered, and for the first time she doubted herself. She guessed that this tall man, both stern and gentle, might think her merely wayward, like a child that has not the firmness of mind to go on with a dull task to the end.
"I myself am in the warden's keeping," answered Faramir, "nor have I yet taken up my authority in the city. But had I done so, I should still listen to his counsel, and should not cross his will in matters of his craft, unless in some great need."
"But I do not desire healing," she said. "I wish to ride to war like my brother Eomer, or better like Theoden the king, for he died and has both honour and peace."
"It is too late, lady, to follow the captains, even if you had the strength," said Faramir. "But death in battle may come to us all yet, willing or unwilling."
"You will be better prepared to face it in your own manner, if while there is still time you do as the healer commanded. You and I, we must endure with patience the hours of waiting."
She did not answer, but as he looked at her, it seemed to him that something in her softened, as though a bitter frost were yielding at the first faint presage of spring. A tear sprang in her eye and fell down her cheek like a glistening raindrop. Her proud head drooped a little. Then quietly, more as if speaking to herself than to him, "But the healers would have me lie abed 7 days yet," she said, "and my window does not look eastward." Her voice was now that of a maiden young and sad. Faramir smiled, though his heart was filled with pity.
"Your window does not look eastward," he said. "That can be amended. In this I will command the warden. If you will stay in this house in our care, lady, and take your rest, then you shall walk in this garden in the sun as you will, and you shall look east, whither all our hopes have gone. And here you will find me, walking and waiting, and also looking east. It would ease my care if you would speak to me, or walk at whiles with me." Then she raised her head and looked him in the eyes again, and a colour came in her pale face. "How should I ease your care, my lord?" she said, "and I do not desire the speech of living men." "Would you have my plain answer?" he said. "I would." "Then, Eowyn of Rohan, I say to you that you are beautiful. In the valleys of our hills there are flowers fair and bright, and maidens fairer still, but neither flower nor lady have I seen till now in Gondor so lovely and so sorrowful. It may be that only a few days are left ere darkness falls upon our world, and when it comes I hope to face it steadily. But it would ease my heart if, while the sun yet shines, I could see you still. For you and I have both passed under the wings of the shadow, and the same hand drew us back." "Alas, not me, lord," she said. "Shadow lies on me still. Look not to me for healing. I am a shield maiden, and my hand is ungentle. But I thank you for this at least, that I need not keep to my chamber. I will walk abroad by the grace of the steward of the city." And she did him a courtesy and walked back to the house. But Faramir for a long while walked alone in the garden, and his glance now strayed rather to the house than to the eastward walls. When he returned to his chamber, he called for the warden, and heard all that he could tell of the Lady of Rohan.
"But I doubt not, lord," said the warden, "that you would learn more from the halfling that is with us, for he was in the riding of the king, and with the lady at the end, they say."
And so Merry was sent to Faramir, and while that day lasted they talked long together, and Faramir learned much, more even than Merry put into words, and he thought that he understood now something of the grief and unrest of Eowyn of Rohan. And in the fair evening Faramir and Merry walked in the garden, but she did not come. But in the morning, as Faramir came from the houses, he saw her as she stood upon the walls, and she was clad all in white and gleamed in the sun. And he called to her, and she came down, and they walked on the grass or sat under a green tree together, now in silence, now in speech. And each day after they did likewise. And the warden, looking from his window, was glad in heart, for he was a healer, and his care was lightened. And certain it was that, heavy as was the dread and foreboding of those days upon the hearts of men, still these two of his charges prospered and grew daily in strength. And so the fifth day came since the Lady Eowyn went first to Faramir, and they stood now together once more upon the walls of the city and looked out. No tidings had yet come, and all hearts were darkened. The weather, too, was bright no longer. It was cold. A wind that had sprung up in the night was blowing now keenly from the north, and it was rising. But the lands about looked grey and drear. They were clad in warm raiment and heavy cloaks, and over all the Lady Eowyn wore a great blue mantle of the colour of deep summer night, and it was set with silver stars about hem and throat. Faramir had sent for this robe, and had wrapped it about her, and he thought that she looked fair and queenly indeed, as she stood there at his side. The mantle was wrought by his mother, Finduilas of Armroth, who died untimely, and was to him but a memory of loveliness in far days, and of his first grief. And her robe seemed to him raiment fitting for the beauty and sadness of Eowyn. But she now shivered beneath the starry mantle, and she looked northward, above the grey hitherlands, into the eye of the cold wind, where far away the sky was hard and clear.
"What do you look for, Eowyn?" said Faramir.
"Does not the black gate lie yonder?" she said. "And must he not now become thither?"
"'It is 7 days since he rode away.'
"'7 days,' said Faramir. "'But think not ill of me if I say to you, "'they have brought me both a joy and a pain that I never thought to know. "'Joy to see you, but pain, "'because now the fear and doubt of this evil time are grown dark indeed. "'Eowyn, I would not have this world end now, "'or lose so soon what I have found.'
"'Lose what you have found, lord,' she answered. "'But she looked at him gravely, and her eyes were kind. "'I know not what, in these days, you have found that you could lose. "'But come, my friend, let us not speak of it. "'Let us not speak at all. "'I stand upon some dreadful brink, "'and it is utterly dark in the abyss before my feet. "'But whether there is any light behind me, I cannot tell. "'For I cannot turn yet.' I wait for some stroke of doom.
Yes, we wait for the stroke of doom, said Faramir. And they said no more, and it seemed to them, as they stood upon the wall, that the wind died, and the light failed, and the sun was bleared, and all sounds in the city or in the lands about were hushed. Neither wind, nor voice, nor bird call, nor rustle of leaf, nor their own breath could be heard. The very beating of their hearts was stilled. Time halted. And as they stood so, their hands met and clasped, though they did not know it. And still they waited, for they knew not what. Then presently it seemed to them that above the ridges of the distant mountains another vast mountain of darkness rose, towering up like a wave that should engulf the world, and about it lightnings flickered. And then a tremor ran through the earth, and they felt the walls of the city quiver. A sound like a sigh went up from all the lands about them, and their hearts beat suddenly again. "'It reminds me of Numenor,' said Faramir, and wondered to hear himself speak. "'Of Numenor?' said Eowyn. "'Yes,' said Faramir, "'of the land of Westerness that founded, "'and of the great dark wave climbing over the green lands "'and above the hills, and coming on, darkness unescapable. "'I often dream of it.' "'Then you think that the darkness is coming,' said Eowyn. "'Darkness unescapable.' "'And suddenly she drew close to him. "'No,' said Faramir, looking into her face. It was but a picture in the mind. I don't know what's happening. The reason of my waking mind tells me that great evil has befallen, and we stand at the end of days. But my heart says nay, and all my limbs are light, and a hope and joy are come to me that no reason can deny. Eowyn, Eowyn, White Lady of Rohan, in this hour I don't believe that any darkness will endure. And he stooped and kissed her brow. And so they stood on the walls of the city of Gondor, and a great wind rose and blew, and their hair, raven and golden, streamed out mingling in the air. And the shadow departed, and the sun was unveiled, and light leaped forth, and the waters of Anduin shone like silver, and in all the houses of the city men sang for the joy that welled up in their hearts from what source they could not tell. And before the sun had fallen far from the noon, out of the east there came a great eagle flying, and he bore tidings beyond hope from the lords of the west, crying, "Sing now, ye people of the Tower of Anor, for the realm of Sauron is ended for ever, and the dark tower is thrown down. Sing and rejoice, ye people of the Tower of God, for your watch hath not been in vain, and the black gate is broken, and your king hath passed through, and he is victorious. Sing and be glad, all ye children of the West, for your king shall come again, and he shall dwell among you all the days of your life. And the tree that was withered shall be renewed, and he shall plant it in the high places, and the city shall be blessed. Sing, all ye people!" And the people sang in all the ways of the city. The days that followed were golden, and spring and summer joined and made revel together in the fields of Gondor.
and tidings now came by swift riders from Caer Andros of all that was done, and the city made ready for the coming of the king. Merry was summoned, and rode away with the wains that took store of goods to Osgiliath, and thence by ship to Caer Andros. But Faramir did not go, for now, being healed, he took upon him his authority and the stewardship, although it was only for a little while, and his duty was to prepare for one who should replace him. And Eowyn did not go, though her brother sent word, begging her to come to the field of Cormallan. And Faramir wondered at this, but he saw her seldom, being busy with many matters, and she dwelt still in the houses of healing, and walked alone in the garden, and her face grew pale again, and it seemed that in all the city she only was ailing and sorrowful. And the warden of the houses was troubled, and he spoke to Faramir. Then Faramir came and sought her, and once more they stood on the walls together, and he said to her, "Eowyn, why do you tarry here, and do not go to the rejoicing in Cormallan beyond Caer Andros, where your brother awaits you?" And she said, "Do you not know?" But he answered, "Two reasons there may be, but which is true I do not know." And she said, "I do not wish to play at riddles. Speak plainer." "Then if you will have it so, lady," he said, "you do not go, because only your brother called for you, and to look on the Lord Aragorn, Elendil's heir, in his triumph would now bring you no joy. Or because I do not go, and you desire still to be near me. And maybe, for both these reasons, and you yourself cannot choose between them. Eowyn, do you not love me, or will you not?" "I wished to be loved by another," she answered, "but I desire no man's pity." "That I know," he said. "You desired to have the love of the Lord Aragorn, because he was high and puissant, and you wished to have renown and glory, and to be lifted far above the mean things that crawl on the earth. And as a great captain may to a young soldier, he seemed to you admirable, for so he is, a lord among men, the greatest that now is. But when he gave you only understanding and pity, then you desired to have nothing, unless a brave death in battle. Look at me, Eowyn." And Eowyn looked at Faramir long and steadily, and Faramir said, "Do not scorn pity that is the gift of a gentle heart, Eowyn. But I don't offer you my pity, for you are a lady high and valiant, and have yourself won renown that shall not be forgotten, and you are a lady beautiful, I deem, beyond even the words of the elven tongue to tell. And I love you. Once I pitied your sorrow. But now, were you sorrowless, without fear of any lack, were you the blissful queen of Gondor, still I would love you. Eowyn, do you not love me?" And the heart of Eowyn changed, or else at last she understood it, and suddenly her winter passed, and the sun shone on her. "I stand in Minas Anor, the Tower of the Sun," she said, "and behold, the shadow has departed. I will be a shield maiden no longer, nor vie with the great riders, nor take joy only in the songs of slaying. I will be a healer, and love all things that grow and are not barren." And again she looked at Faramir. "No longer do I desire to be a queen," she said. Then Faramir laughed merrily. "That is well," he said, "for I am not a king. Yet I will wed with a white lady of Rohan, if it be her will. And if she will, then let us cross the river, and in happier days let us dwell in fair Ithilien, and there make a garden. All things will grow with joy there, if the white lady comes." "Then must I leave my own people, man of Gondor?" she said. "And would you have your proud folk say of you, 'There goes a lord who tamed a wild shield maiden of the north. Was there no woman of the race of Numenor to choose?'" "I would," said Faramir. And he took her in his arms and kissed her under the sunlit sky. And he cared not that they stood high upon the walls in the sight of many. And many indeed saw them, and the light that shone about them as they came down from the walls and went hand in hand to the houses of healing.
And to the warden of the houses, Faramir said, "Here is the Lady Eowyn of Rohan, and now she is healed." And the warden said,
"Then I release her from my charge, and bid her farewell, and may she suffer never hurt nor sickness again. I commend her to the care of the steward of the city until her brother returns." But Eowyn said, "Yet now that I have leave to depart, I would remain. For this house has become to me of all dwellings the most blessed." And she remained there until King Eomer came. All things were now made ready in the city, and there was great concourse of people, for the tidings had gone out into all parts of Gondor, from Min Rimmon even to Pinnoth Gelin, and the far coasts of the sea. And all that could come to the city made haste to come. And the city was filled again with women and fair children that returned to their homes laden with flowers. And from Dol Amroth came the harpers that harped most skilfully in all the land, and there were players upon viols, and upon flutes, and upon horns of silver, and clear-voiced singers from the vales of Lebenin. At last an evening came, when from the walls the pavilions could be seen upon the field, and all night lights were burning as men watched for the dawn. And when the sun rose in the clear morning above the mountains in the east, upon which shadows lay no more, then all the bells rang, and all the banners broke and flowed in the wind, and upon the white tower of the citadel, the standard of the stewards, bright argent like snow in the sun, bearing no charge nor device, was raised over Gondor for the last time. Now the captains of the west led their host towards the city, and folk saw them advance in line upon line, flashing and glinting in the sunrise and rippling like silver. And so they came before the gateway and halted a furlong from the walls. As yet no gates had been set up again, but a barrier was laid across the entrance to the city, and there stood men-at-arms in silver and black with long swords drawn. Before the barrier stood Faramir the steward, and Húrin, warden of the keys, and other captains of Gondor, and the Lady Eowyn of Rohan, with Elfhelm of the Marshal, and many knights of the mark. And upon either side of the gate was a great press of fair people in raiment of many colours and garlands of flowers. So now there was a wide space before the walls of Minas Tirith, and it was hemmed in upon all sides by the knights and the soldiers of Gondor and of Rohan, and by the people of the city and of all parts of the land. A hush fell upon all, as out from the host stepped the Dúnedain in silver and grey, and before them came walking slow the Lord Aragorn. He was clad in black mail girt with silver, and he wore a long mantle of pure white, clasped at the throat with a great jewel of green that shone from afar. But his head was bare, save for a star upon his forehead, bound by a slender fillet of silver. With him were Eomer of Rohan, and the Prince Imrahil, and Gandalf robed all in white, and four small figures that many men marvelled to see.
"Nay, cousin, they are not boys," said Yoreth to her kinswoman from Imloth Melwy, who stood beside her. "Those are Periine, out of the far country of the Halflings, where they are princes of great fame, it is said. I should know, for I had one to tend in the houses. They're small, but they are valiant. Why, cousin, one of them went with only his esquire into the Black Country, and fought with a Dark Lord all by himself, and set fire to his tower, if you can believe it. At least that is the tale in the city. That will be the one that walks with our Elfstone. They're dear friends, I hear. Now he is a marvel, the Lord Elfstone, not too soft in his speech, mind you, but he has a golden heart, as the saying is, and he has the healing hands. The hands of the king are the hands of a healer, I said, and that was how it was all discovered. And Mithranda, he said to me, 'Yoreth, men will long remember your words, and—' But Yoreth was not permitted to continue the instruction of her kinswoman from the country, for a single trumpet rang, and a dead silence followed. Then forth from the gate went Faramir from Húrin of the Keys, and no others, save that behind them walked four men in the high helms and armour of the citadel, and they bore a great casket of black lebethron bound with silver.
Faramir met Aragorn in the midst of those there assembled, and he knelt and said,
"The last steward of Gondor begs leave to surrender his office."
And he held out a white rod. But Aragorn took the rod and gave it back, saying,
"That office is not ended, and it shall be thine and thy heirs as long as my line shall last. Do now thy office."
Then Faramir stood up and spoke in a clear voice.
"Men of Gondor, hear now the steward of this realm. Behold, one has come to claim the kingship again at last. Here is Aragorn, son of Arathorn, chieftain of the Dunedain of Arnor, captain of the host of the West, bearer of the Star of the North, wielder of the sword reforged, victorious in battle, whose hands bring healing, the Elfstone, Elessar of the line of Valandil, Isildur's son, Elendil, son of Numenor. Shall he be king and enter into the city and dwell there?" And all the host and all the people cried, "Yea," with one voice. And Eorah said to her kinswoman, "This is just a ceremony such as we have in the city, cousin, for he has already entered, as I was telling you, and he said to me." And then again she was obliged to silence, for Faramir spoke again. "Men of Gondor, the law masters tell that it was the custom of old that the king should receive the crown from his father ere he died, or if that might not be, that he should go alone and take it from the hands of his father in the tomb where he was laid. But since things must now be done otherwise, using the authority of the steward, I have today brought hither from Rath Didon the crown of Eanor, the last king, whose days passed in the time of our long fathers of old."
Then the guard stepped forward, and Faramir opened the casket, and he held up an ancient crown. It was shaped like the helms of the guards of the citadel, save that it was loftier, and it was all white, and the wings at either side were wrought of pearl and silver in the likeness of the wings of a seabird, for it was the emblem of kings who came over the sea. And 7 gems of adamant were set in the circlet, and upon its summit was set a single jewel, the light of which went up like a flame. Then Aragorn took the crown and held it up and said,
"Etiarello endorena utulien sinome maravan ar hildiniar ten ambarmetta."
And those were the words that Elendil spoke when he came up out of the sea on the wings of the wind. "Out of the great sea to Middle-earth I am come. In this place will I abide, and my heirs until the ending of the world." Then, to the wonder of many, Aragorn did not put the crown upon his head, but gave it back to Faramir, and said, "By the labour and valour of many I have come into my inheritance. In token of this I would have the ring-bearer bring the crown to me, and let Mithrandir set it upon my head if he will. For he has been the mover of all that has been accomplished, and this is his victory." Then Frodo came forward, and took the crown from Faramir, and bore it to Gandalf. And Aragorn knelt, and Gandalf set the white crown upon his head, and said,
"Now come the days of the king, and may they be blessed while the thrones of the Valar endure."
But when Aragorn arose, all that beheld him gazed in silence, for it seemed to them that he was revealed to them now for the first time. Tall as the sea kings of old, he stood above all that were near. Ancient of days he seemed, and yet in the flower of manhood, and wisdom sat upon his brow, and strength and healing were in his hands, and a light was about him. And then Faramir cried,
"Behold the king!"
And in that moment all the trumpets were blown, and the king Elessar went forth and came to the barrier, and Húrin of the Keys thrust it back, and amid the music of harp and of viol and of flute, and the singing of clear voices, the king passed through the flower-laden streets, and came to the citadel, and entered in. And the banner of the tree and the stars were unfurled upon the topmost tower,
and the reign of King Elessar began, of which many songs have told. In his time the city was made more fair than it had ever been, even in the days of its first glory, and it was filled with trees and with fountains, and its gates were wrought of mithril and steel, and its streets were paved with white marble, and the folk of the mountain laboured in it, and the folk of the wood rejoiced to come there. And all was healed and made good, and the houses were filled with men and women and the laughter of children, and no window was blind, nor any courtyard empty. And after the ending of the third age of the world into the new age, it preserved the memory and the glory of the years that were gone. In the days that followed his crowning, the king sat on his throne in the halls of the kings and pronounced his judgments. And embassies came from many lands and peoples, from the east and the south, and from the borders of Mirkwood, and from Dunland in the west. And the king pardoned the Easterlings that had given themselves up, and sent them away free, and he made peace with the peoples of Harad. And the slaves of Mordor he released, and gave to them all the lands about Lake Noornan to be their own. And there were brought before him many to receive his praise and reward for their valour. And last the captain of the guard brought to him Beregond to be judged. And the king said to Beregond, Beregond, by your sword blood was spilled in the hallows, where that is forbidden. Also you left your post without leave of lord or of captain. For these things of old death was the penalty. Now, therefore, I must pronounce your doom. All penalty is remitted for your valour in battle, and still more because all that you did was for the love of the Lord Faramir. Nonetheless, you must leave the guard of the citadel, and you must go forth from the city of Minas Tirith. Then the blood left Beregond's face, and he was stricken to the heart and bowed his head. But the king said, So it must be, for you are appointed to the White Company, the guard of Faramir, Prince of Ithilien, and you shall be its captain and dwell in Eminanen in honour and peace, and in the service of him for whom you risked all to save him from death. And then Beregond, perceiving the mercy and justice of the king, was glad, and kneeling kissed his hand, and departed in joy and content. And Aragorn gave to Faramir Ithilien to be his princedom, and bade him dwell in the hills of Emin Arnon, within sight of the city. For, he said, Minas Ithil in Morgul Vale shall be utterly destroyed, and though it may in time to come be made clean, no man may dwell there for many long years. And last of all Aragorn greeted Éomer of Rohan, and they embraced, and Aragorn said, Between us there can be no word of giving or taking, nor of reward, for we are brethren. In happy hour did Eol ride from the north, and never has any league of peoples been more blessed, so that neither has ever failed the other, nor shall fail. Now, as you know, we have laid Theoden the renowned in a tomb in the hallows, and there he shall lie for ever among the kings of Gondor, if you will. Or, if you desire it, we will come to Rohan and bring him back to rest with his own people. And Éomer answered, Since the day when you rose before me out of the green grass of the downs I have loved you, and that love shall not fail. But now I must depart for a while to my own realm, where there is much to heal and set in order. But as for the fallen, when all is made ready, we will return for him. But here let him sleep a while. And Éowyn said to Faramir, Now I must go back to my own land, and look on it once again, and help my brother in his labour. But when one whom I long loved as father is laid at last to rest, I will return. So the glad days passed, and on the 8th day of May the riders of Rohan made ready, and rode off by the north way, and with them went the sons of Elrond. All the roads were lined with people, to do them honour and praise them, from the gate of the city to the walls of the Pelennor. Then all others that dwelt afar went back to their homes rejoicing,
but in the city there was labour of many willing hands to rebuild and renew and to remove all the scars of war and the memory of the darkness. The hobbits still remained in Minas Tirith, with Legolas and Gimli, for Aragorn was loath for the friendship to be dissolved.
"At last all such things must end," he said. "But I would have you wait a little while longer, for the end of the deeds that you have shared in has not yet come. A day draws near that I have looked for in all the years of my manhood, and when it comes I would have my friends beside me." But of that day he would say no more.
In those days the companions of the ring dwelt together in a fair house with Gandalf, and they went to and fro as they wished. And Frodo said to Gandalf, "Do you know what this day is that Aragorn speaks of? For we are happy here, and I don't wish to go, but the days are running away, and Bilbo's waiting, and the Shire is my home."
"As for Bilbo," said Gandalf, "he's waiting for the same day, and he knows what keeps you. And as for the passing of the days, it's now only May, and high summer is not yet in. And though all things may seem changed, as if an age of the world had gone by, yet to the trees and the grass it is less than a year since you set out."
"Pippin," said Frodo, "didn't you say that Gandalf was less close than of old? He was weary of his labours then, I think. Now he's recovering." And Gandalf said,
"Many folk like to know beforehand what is to be set on the table, but those who have laboured to prepare the feast like to keep their secret, for wonder makes the words of praise louder, and Aragorn himself waits for a sign."
There came a day when Gandalf could not be found, and the companions wondered what was going forward. But Gandalf took Aragorn out from the city by night, and he brought him to the southern feet of Mount Mindolwin. And there they found a path made in ages past that few now dared to tread, for it led up onto the mountain to a high hollow where only the kings had been wont to go. And they went up by steep ways until they came to a high field below the snows that clad the lofty peaks, and it looked down over the precipice that stood behind the city. And standing there they surveyed the lands, for the morning was come. And they saw the towers of the city far below them, like white pencils touched by the sunlight. And all the vale of Anduin was like a garden, and the mountains of shadow were veiled in a golden mist. Upon the one side their sight reached to the grey Emin Weal, and the glint of Rauros was like a star twinkling far off. And upon the other side they saw the river like a ribbon laid down to Pelargir, and beyond that was a light on the hem of the sky that spoke of the sea. And Gandalf said,
"This is your realm, and the heart of the greater realm that shall be. The third age of the world is ended, and the new age is begun. And it is your task to order its beginning and to preserve what may be preserved. For though much has been saved, much must now pass away, and the power of the three rings also is ended. And all the lands that you see, and those that lie round about them, shall be dwellings of men, for the time comes of the dominion of men, and the elder kindred shall fade or depart."
"I know it well, dear friend," said Aragorn, "but I would still have your counsel."
"Not for long now," said Gandalf.